It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The king is a narcissist. LeBron wants you to ask him about Jerry Jones. Why don't we ask him about China? The king, the emperor, has no clothes. Two, Kanye's blown himself up. And Sam Bankman-Fried gets a round of applause. And I am, forgive me, passionate about the idea of free speech. Three, don't even play the conference championship games. Just end it here. These four teams should be in the college football playoff. Plus, get ready for USA versus Netherlands. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? Welcome to the weekend. Welcome to Friday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment. Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. It always helps if you leave a comment or leave a 5-star rating or simply do it the old school way of sharing this podcast with your friends. And while we're at it, let me ask you a favor. Let me ask you a question. Why? Why do you listen to the Will Cain Podcast? I thought about asking you this question and then I remembered the only way that I've ever done media, the only way that I've ever done media successfully was just simply to be myself and to be real, to be authentic. And I actually want to know, why do you listen to the Will Cain Podcast? Media is a funny thing. I think about it a lot. It's my career, but I don't just think about it as a quote unquote professional. I think about it as a consumer. You know, it's interesting. If you gave Joe Rogan a primetime show on Fox News, it would not be a massive success. He wouldn't find the millions of viewers waiting for him there in the same way they're waiting for Tucker Carlson. You have to meet the audience where it is. It's why I used to criticize my colleagues so regularly at ESPN. It's like walking into AT&T Stadium, Jerry World, everyone, 80,000 people, expecting to watch a game between the Dallas Cowboys and the Indianapolis Colts this Sunday. And instead, as they walk into the stadium, a small stage has been built in the middle of the field on top of the star, and there awaiting them is Joel Osteen, ready for an hour-long sermon. Now, it's not to say that Joel Osteen can't fill a stadium or Joel Osteen isn't popular. It's to say that's not really meeting the audience. I think it's safe to say the 80,000 would be disappointed to find out they'd be listening to Osteen instead of watching Tony Pollard. You got to meet the audience where they are. And in media, that means finding the right avenue, the right platform to find the people who want to hear what it is that you have to say. Rogan is a genius on podcast. That doesn't mean he's a genius on cable news. You could make the same argument for everyone. Howard Stern, an absolute king, well past his prime, but an absolute king in terrestrial radio. That doesn't mean that Howard Stern would even be a star in podcasting. You can keep playing this game. Bill O'Reilly, a star at 8 p.m. on Fox News. Would he have been a star at 9 p.m.? I mean, really, honestly, we're talking about tight little fiefdoms of success. Now, probably O'Reilly could have moved to 9 p.m. Hannity has moved several times and continued to find success. How about this? Could you stay in the exact same time slot and simply move networks? Could Bill O'Reilly have moved from Fox to CNN and been a massive success? I don't think the answer is yes, because you have to meet the audience where they live. So doing a three times a week podcast and talking to you puts me in an interesting position. If I had a daily show, what you and I would be talking about on a daily basis is the news of the day. If I had a once a week podcast, what we'd be doing is diving deeper once a week into news and sports. For that matter, if I had a sports show, we would only talk about sports. And if I had an exclusively political show, we would only talk about politics. So here I am today, as I like to do, as probably all do, as we approach the end of the year, navel gazing, asking myself, what works? Where does it work? And why do you listen to the Will Cain podcast? If you email me at cwillcain@gmail.com, or you tweet me at Will Cain, or you go on to my Facebook and leave a comment, or hit me up on Instagram, I will read your comments. I will appreciate your comments. Let me illustrate. In the last episode of the Will Cain podcast, I asked you for recommendations when it comes to a history podcast. I love history. I'd say it's somewhere behind sports in terms of my escapist entertainment. Can't tell you how many movies I've watched on, honestly, lately it seems like World War I. So I want a podcast that tells me a story. Whenever you ask somebody about history podcasts, they unerringly will mention Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. And I have listened to one. I made my whole family listen to one once on a vacation in Hawaii on the drive to Hana. My poor family. They had to listen to the history of the Persian Empire. But I do recognize that 7 hours is a bit much for anyone, including me. So I'd love a history podcast that's somewhere between 1 and 3 hours, 1 and 3 episodes. I'd love it if it was conversational, maybe a little bro-y, maybe a little humor, maybe a little bit of a hangout, but smart, something that tells me a story. So I asked you, where do I go? I have liked from time to time Daryl Cooper's Martyr Maid. Doesn't check all the boxes for me, checks a lot. And I wanted to share with you then some of the responses I got from you. First of all, Matthew Cedar really put time into his response. Now, Matthew's a Dallas Theological Seminary graduate. He is looking at getting a PhD in history, and he gave me a long list. I'm going to share with you some of them. First of all, he told me, here's a good one. The Rest is History with Dominic Sandbrook and Tom Holland. That was also given to me by Jarrett Martin. He sent me an email in and said he likes The Rest is History. Matthew went on to say, Mike Duncan's History of Rome and Revolutions, The Unraveling, Jocko Willenick, History on Fire, Daniel Bellelli, The Tides of History, Patrick Wyman. Now, I haven't had a chance to look into all of these. Anybody that was repeated, like The Rest is History, in several different recommendations, I'm going to make sure to highlight for you and for me. Thomas Bianchi, who played football at Lehigh, been following me since my days at ESPN, loves history, majored in English, now works construction. Love that story. Thomas Bianchi says, history that doesn't suck. It's chronological. It goes through the United States of America. It incorporates sound effects, and each episode is about 1 hour. Definitely going to check out History That Doesn't Suck. Also, he recommends there's a show in 30 to 50 minute episodes called The Short History of, fill in the blank, whatever the subject is of that episode. A friend of mine, who I don't know that if he wants his friend, his name mentioned or not, tells me, you've been talking a lot about World Cup and soccer, and I have. He says, football against the enemy in the history or history and football. There's a lot of good books about soccer and its place in sort of geopolitics, even in warfare. Because it is such a global sport, it becomes almost the diplomatic or battleground of the world. While we're on the note of soccer, I know I touched on this last time, and I'm going to ramble today because you and I are just going to have a conversation. But I tweeted this during the U.S.-Iran game. I mean, there's two dudes, right? There's two dudes. I think I talked about this last time, so I'm not going to belabor it. But the I Hate Soccer guy okay, you don't like soccer. You think it's boring. You think it's soft. And all that flopping, I get it. But I'm just telling you, I used to mock it. And it's not boring. In my personal subjective taste, driven through the lens of my children and everything I've poured into soccer, I mean, I'm watching, I don't know how many hours of amateur soccer and YouTube videos a week, but once I'm kind of deep into this strategy and the tactics, I love soccer. But it's really not even I hate soccer guy that bothers me the most. It's the Europhile. I discovered the garage band before they became cool soccer guy. I get it. You like wearing your infantile jersey, and it is infantile. Really, any jersey is when an adult man wears a jersey, but there's something particular about the soccer jersey. And look, some of my friends probably hear that I'm talking to, but there's something like a basketball jersey and a soccer jersey, I think, are the most juvenile versions of a jersey to be worn by a grown man. And, you know, you're wearing your kit and you play on a pitch, and God help you if you say football instead of soccer. At that point, I really don't know if we can be friends. It's America. It's called soccer. But you didn't discover the world's most popular sport. And just because it's been the one thing that you've had while all the Neanderthals in your high school focused on more popular sports, and this became your thing like goth, it doesn't mean that no one else has ever watched soccer or understands it. And the truth is, like basketball guy, who's number one in the worst sports guys, like basketball guy, you don't actually watch that much soccer. I know, because I'm deep in sports world. You watch highlights. You maybe get a pint of Guinness here and there once a month, early when you wake up and watch a game. Basketball guy lives on highlights. You live on, I don't know, yesterday. A teenage rebel that no longer exists, holding on to the world's most popular sport as his own personal possession. You're actually worse than the guy who hates soccer. Anyway, I lose my place. History podcast. Thank you for your recommendations. I'm going to be checking these out. I think I might have to start a history podcast along with a sports podcast exclusive in the near future. We, of course, have to focus on the history of Texas. But I will read your recommendations again on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, and in my email at cwillcain@gmail.com. I really enjoy hearing back from you, and I do want to hear why you listen to the Will Cain podcast. Story number one. The emperor, in this case, the king, well, he has no clothes, he has no insight, and he's an absolute narcissist. LeBron James, the self-described king of basketball, took to a podium this week, and he decided to chide the court. And I use that phrase not just as a cute metaphor, because LeBron James does envision himself as the king, and the media truly is his court. This was a press conference of minions laid below, literally, and before the king. And he grabs the microphone. He says, I want to tell you something. I'm very disappointed in you. I'm very, very disappointed in you. LeBron tells the media that they were so quick to ask him about Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, of course, which we didn't talk about a lot here on the Will Cain podcast, made waves. And I probably will not get all the details 100% correct, but made waves in retweeting a movie that people have described as anti-Semitic. I say people as described because I've never seen it. I don't know the movie, and I don't accept other people's characterizations where, I don't know, the things they call homophobic, transphobic, racist. I mean, I never take someone's secondhand characterization without evidence of some other piece of content. So maybe it is and maybe it isn't. I don't know. I've never seen it. But Kyrie Irving put it out and everybody said it was anti-Semitic. The media came down on Kyrie. The NBA came down on Kyrie. It was a big story. It was a big controversy. And it was one that brought questions to LeBron James. So LeBron on this occasion chides his media minions by saying, you asked me so much about that, but I find it funny that you don't ask me about Jerry Jones. Now, we haven't talked about that yet here together on the Will Cain podcast. Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys in the National Football League, was reported last week in the Washington Post to have been discovered in a photo from the 1950s, 66 years ago, to be in the crowd, in the background of a crowd, who was blocking the integration of schools, his school, in Little Rock. Now, it's a photo. You're probably familiar with the type, but not this particular photo of school integration in the 1950s and young black kids making their way into their newly integrated school, met by a mob of angry white kids. These are teenagers. These are high school kids. And it's ugly. It's an ugly moment in American history, and it's an ugly image. Now, in the image, there are several teenage white kids, like, mean face, mad, yelling in the face of these black kids. In the mob, in the crowd, in the background, is a 14-year-old Jerry Jones. He has admitted that it is him. He's 14 years old at the time. And he's sort of craning his neck, rubbernecking, and looking down to see if he can see what's happening. I'd say 3-4 rows of the crowd in front of him. That's it. It's a still image. It's Arkansas. It's the 1950s. And that's the story. Now, the Washington Post and many members of your media have extrapolated that one image into this story. Well, Jerry Jones has never hired a black head coach in the NFL. And this explains the roots of his racial bias. They use this image as a modern day story about not just Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys and the NFL, but about America, which is inane. I'll get to that in just a moment, but let's stick with LeBron. LeBron is upset that the media has not asked him. I think the better word, the word he used specifically, and it's such a better word, is LeBron is disappointed that they haven't asked him about Jerry Jones' photo when they've asked him so much about Kyrie. Now, this is the emperor showing his naked ass. He has on several occasions, like when he sits in front of a media scrum and pretends to read books. Have you seen this? It's amazing. LeBron has done it more than once, pretends to read a book in front of the media like he's engrossed. He's usually only got the book open to like page one. The best one is, I think it's Malcolm X's biography. What do you, and they asked him about it. And LeBron says, what's your favorite part? Oh, there's so many good parts. I don't know. It's hard to focus on just one. Book report due. You didn't do your book report, did you, son? Say the same sentence several times in different versions. In short, learn from Kamala Harris, Vice President of the United States. But anyway, LeBron is disappointed that he wasn't asked about a story in a different sport from 66 years ago. A story where that photo tells us much less than being asked about a story from his sport, the NBA, happening in real time in present tense, with the main character being not just a player in the NBA, but a former teammate and friend of LeBron James in Kyrie Irving. And LeBron James just can't tell the difference. So disappointed. Why you would ask me about one, but not the other? Now, here's where and how the argument goes. Sports colleagues say the following. Don't get caught in the details. The story is this. The disparate treatment of these two stories. Why is it a black athlete that messes up receives this type of media attention and a white owner who has this revealed in his past receives this level of attention? They say way more for Kyrie than for Jerry Jones. And their answer to that is race. And my response to that is, you're a racist. Not you listening. You making that argument are a racist. I don't care what race you are. You are only capable of seeing any story through the prism of skin deep color. Look, here's why those two stories receive different attention. Because largely the Jerry Jones story isn't a story. It is a glimpse in time, and it's almost like a Where's Waldo moment where you have a modern day powerful and celebrity figure transported back in time to an infamous moment in American history. But his participation in that moment, we know of nothing. Was he racist? I don't know. That was 66 years ago. He didn't participate, not that we know from that picture. Maybe he did. I don't know. Maybe he ran three rows forward and yelled in the faces of those poor black kids. But we don't know that, and we can't extrapolate. Much less the stupidity, the sheer, I don't even know if it's stupidity. It's dishonesty. Some of my former colleagues, friends, of extrapolating that into his character today and his hiring practices. It's just so stupid. And if it's dishonest, then it's a stupid, bad sleight of hand shell game. I can see the ball moving. I know which shell holds the ball. You have to be able to see the difference between these two stories. When Kyrie Irving's story happened this month, when Kyrie Irving's story happened in the NBA, that's why those two stories received disparate impact, not because of the skin color of the two characters involved. And if you can only see stories through the color of the skin of the characters, you are a racist. Now, let's deal with LeBron. LeBron apparently can't see the distinctions here of why he would be asked to comment on a story in the NBA and not in the NFL, why he would be asked to comment on a story of a former teammate in real time versus someone, who, by the way, I think he's a fan of in the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones from the 1950s. But it's clear that LeBron, in playing this game of whataboutism and walking the path from the NBA to the NFL, has now cast himself in the light of general social commenter. He wants to be a political pundit. He wants to be a voice you turn to on important issues in the world. So here is the question then that should be asked of the self-anointed king of social commentary. Do you have anything to say about one of the world's biggest human rights abusers who is currently beating people in the streets of Beijing, where there are social protests erupting in support of freedom and democracy, and where you happen to be making hundreds of millions of dollars? Do you have anything to say about China? My suspicion is our social commentator will show his bare ass and go quiet. The response, and I've seen the response, is, well, that's whataboutism. No, no, no. LeBron started the whataboutism. He went from Kyrie to Jerry. And just because he started spinning the wheel on whataboutism doesn't mean he gets to dictate where the whataboutism stops. If you want to play the game, then we play the game. And we didn't stop somewhere randomly. I didn't ask you about human rights abuses in Burma, Myanmar. I didn't ask you about anything taking place, oh, say, in Eastern Africa. I asked you specifically about the country from where you make hundreds of millions of dollars. Anybody doing business in China is in business with the Chinese Communist Party. I'm asking you, LeBron, about your business partner. I'm asking you about China. It's not any more whataboutism than the game that LeBron began in moving from Kyrie to Jerry. He chunked rocks, standing in his palatial house of glass. And anyone knows if you throw rocks from a glass house, expect to have a few windows shattered. His palatial mansion of glass in the shape, well, designated by the Chinese Communist Party. Somehow, in pointing out LeBron James' absurd narcissism, absurd hypocrisy, makes one a racist. But just like anything else in society, science deniers, free speech advocates, censors, it is the one who calls others certain names that most often, not invariably, but most often harbors those sins within themselves. Those that see this story only through the prism of race are, in fact, the racist. We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Story number two. Kanye is on a media tour, absolutely self-sabotaging his career. Kanye West on a media tour, and it is received absolutely different than the media tour of Sam Bankman-Fried, the founder and crook behind FTX. Look, Kanye West has lost his mind. Really, the only question is when. Kanye West appeared this week on several different programs. He appeared on Tim Pool's Timcast earlier in the week, and he's traveling the country with, I believe, and I think I'm saying this correctly without enough of my own personal research, but I believe the characterization is accurate, an openly avowed white supremacist in Nick Fuentes, and both of whom are readily engaging in the conversation of the role of Jewish people in American society. Every conversation that they hold right now turns to that subject. It turned that way on the Timcast, and Tim Pool pushed back, in my estimation, in the slightest of manner, and Kanye West walked out of the interview. And what probably was budgeted to be something like an hour and a half conversation ended within the first 10 minutes. Then Kanye found his platform with Alex Jones on InfoWars. And Kanye and Nick Fuentes were just getting started. Kanye showed up to that interview with Alex Jones wearing something like a GIMP mask. You couldn't see his face. I think he had a zipper across his mouth. It was a GIMP mask. And he went on in that conversation to blatantly say, and these are accurate characterizations, that Hitler did a lot of good things. And you sit there and go, what, man? And even if you're trying to do this like super everybody has a good side to them thing, if you're trying to like see the world through the most charitable lens possible, you'd have to say that maybe that Hitler was a caring lover to Eva Braun or was a decent finger paint artist would pale in comparison, or maybe he was good to his dogs. Whatever his good side might be, pales into comparison to the fact that he, I don't know, engineered the slaughter of some 8 million Jews. But Kanye didn't stop there. He said, we got to stop dissing Nazis. I think at one point he did say, I like Hitler. Like those words. Those words, I think, were actually put together. And one would have to say, clearly Kanye has lost his mind. Now, here's one thing that's about this story that I have thought or felt for quite some time. It's not as significant as its coverage. And I think, I'll be real, it could be because I've never been a big fan. Like, I don't listen to Kanye's music. A little bit. Not a lot. I'm not a big rap fan. I've been listening to David Morris lately. Hey, country rap has taken a couple steps forward. You can mock me, but I'm going to tell you something. That Dutton Ranch freestyle is pretty fun. So, I'm not big into rap. So, maybe I don't fully understand or appreciate, you know, Kanye's cultural influence. And I know that Kanye will tell me that he's a genius. I mean, that he's a visionary, that he's close to God. I don't know. Kanye will definitely tell me how great is Kanye West. I'm sorry, Ye. But I don't know that it matters in a way much beyond any other stupid celebrity. You know, like celebrities are stupid. Because they're famous, we seem to associate them with insight or relevance. And that's not to say shut up and dribble. I've never been a shut up and dribble person. I believe that an athlete should be able to speak on something in politics. I believe that everybody should. But being able to is not the same thing as A, not paying the price of doing so. You got to be able to, if LeBron wants to be a social commentator, go for it, man. But pay the price for your stupidity. And just because you're capable doesn't mean that we have to say it has weight because you're a celebrity. I'm not asking you to shut up and dribble, but I'm asking you not to act like you're somehow a philosopher because you're famous. And now that Kanye, in the beginning, there was some interest. I think that he was interesting. And I think I defended Ye because first, what you saw was independence. Like, okay, he's not doing the same bought and paid for celebrity line that everyone else does. Oh, it's like that famous saying, you know, if Christopher Hitchens wakes up every day and says there is no God, you don't listen because, well, that's Christopher Hitchens. But if the Pope wakes up one day and goes, I'm not so sure about this whole God thing, everybody goes, huh? What'd he say? And they listen to the Pope. So when you have a big time celebrity start saying independent things, at first your ears perk up and go, huh? Oh, independence. And then you quickly realize he's not right. He's out of his mind. And he is losing it, literally. Billions, everything, his career. He is self-sabotaging. But it's interesting how much he is deservedly receiving criticism, when you posit it against the reaction to Sam Bankman Fried. Right now, the worst you can say, and it's, you know, I'm not waving my hand at this. Kanye West is a thought criminal, says ugly, disgusting things. But Kanye West isn't a real criminal. I mean, not until we criminalize hate speech in the United States of America. And I pray we never do criminalize hate speech, because always it leads to the next question of who decides what is hate speech. While we're on that note, and I won't lose my place, did you guys see Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts say, when it comes to Twitter, one man, Elon Musk, should not be able to go into a dark room and decide how we conduct conversations? Has she lost her ever-loving mind? This is like, again, the racist yelling at everyone else they are racist. That's what Twitter was before. Member of the Cherokee tribe, Senator Elizabeth Warren. She's not, is she a member of the Cherokee tribe or just a self-proclaimed Cherokee? Before, it was Twitter in a dark room deciding how we communicate through the dials of censorship. Musk comes in and opens the gates and allows that dreaded concept of freedom. And to that, you say, one man should not be able to decide. Decide what? Freedom? The freak out over Twitter is so revealing because it reveals the extent to which before they had control. And I get passionate about this. I truly do. Because I just think that freedom of speech is foundational to the American experiment, to Western philosophy. But you have to say the American experiment because very few countries on the face of this planet embrace it in the way that we do in America. Canada's got no problem embracing the concept of hate speech. You know, UK, they don't believe in freedom of speech. They'll shut you up in a minute. They'll arrest you for transphobic stuff. I mean it. The cops will come. I mean, you know other countries. Iran, another quick tangent. Sorry. Did you guys see this? Story of a guy. I think I got his name here. It's been on TMZ, BBC, The Telegraph. Mahan Simek, Iranian guy, right? Celebrates the U.S. beating Iran in the World Cup. Within hours, murdered on the streets of Iran, shot, they think, by government agents, pulled up, shot him for celebrating the U.S. beating Iran. I got a call. I talked about this on Fox News. I got a call afterwards from someone who told me that they had spoken to several people in the know over there that Iranians were rooting for the United States of America. Not because they hate their Iranian team or those players, but because it's a propaganda tool of the mullahs, the Islamic Republic. And so if Iran wins in the World Cup, it supports, it bolsters as a propaganda tool, the Islamic Republic. And so they're rooting for the U.S. But you see the price to pay when it comes to free speech. This man shot by government agents are the reports for celebrating the U.S. over Iran. That's extreme. But again, U.K., Europe, I think it's illegal in Germany to do what Kanye's doing. It's illegal to deny the Holocaust. That they don't, no place on earth has embraced the idea of freedom of speech like has the United States of America. And I will fight that one to my death. Like, that is something I believe. There's a reason it was first. Okay? No one has, I used to say on, and they used to play a drop for me on ESPN, I have a monopoly on the truth. Nobody has a monopoly on the truth. It was a joke. Nobody has a monopoly on the truth. That's why we need to hear from all points of view. It's why you need freedom of speech. And to hear Warren or Democrats, and I'm serious, this is a Democratic Party thing right now. And if it turns and Republicans get control of the dials, then I'll go after them. Because I do think it's an ugly human instinct to say, I don't want to win the battle of ideas. I don't want to persuade. I just want to shut them up. It's just Democrats that have embraced that. And we're handed the tools through like-mindedness in Silicon Valley of using censorship. And the freak out now over Elon is a reflection. It is revealing about the extent to which they had control before, and they've lost that. Boy, give somebody a little bit of taste of power. The worst thing you can do is take it away. Better to have never had it than the demons never unleashed, never revealed. But once you have it, the demon, the diva, the insufferable celebrity personality, whatever you give it, right? Little ego, little power, and the demon comes out. Boy, you can't put it back in the barn. And now they've lost the control, and they're freaking out. Now back to Kanye. He hasn't broken any laws in the United States of America because hate speech is not a crime. Because Holocaust denial is not a crime, because praising Nazis isn't a crime, because liking Hitler isn't a crime. Meanwhile, although he's not yet been charged, it looks really likely that Sam Bankman-Fried behind FTX is a criminal, is a fraudster. He, like Kanye, is doing a media tour. The reaction is very different. He just did a big summit with Andrew Ross Sorkin of the New York Times, Deal Book Summit. And he was met with at the end with some light cross-examination, but met with at the end a round of applause from the audience. Why? I mean, not yet proven, not yet charged. Dude stole billions from crypto investors, potentially, allegedly. Billions missing. Violation of the terms of service? Backdooring the money into his hedge fund Alameda? We don't know. And weirdly, Bill Ackman, big time investor. Or you, how about this, a little more accessible? What's his name? Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank, who O'Leary had said there was no something like there's no safer investment than FTX. That SBF's parents were our regulators, academics, college experts. No safer place to put your money. And then O'Leary loses his money. And now he's on Twitter saying, I think I believe the kid. And Ackman saying, I think I believe SBF. That what? That he's a moron, not a fraudster. Meaning he, oops, lost all these billions. Rising interest rates. Not that he stole it. Not that he was bilking it. Not that he was using it for personal use. Not that he was backing up fraudulent, his own tokens as leverage, selling McBucks, being a criminal. One guy is a thought criminal, objectively condemnable, Kanye West, and is being condemned and losing everything he's built. The other guy lost everything you built and is potentially a fraudster and a criminal. And instead, he is met with support from some of the biggest investors in the world and a round of applause. That's at least odd.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
Story number three. Leave it as it is. Fine, play the conference championship games, but the college football playoffs should be Georgia, Michigan, TCU, and USC until very soon we get our 12-team playoff. Plus, let me get you ready for USA versus Netherlands. First, college football. Your top four before the last weekend of college football are Georgia number one, Michigan number two, TCU number three, USC number four. On the outside looking in, Ohio State with one loss, Alabama with two. Now, this weekend in conference championship games, USC takes on, I believe, is it Washington or Utah? I just forgot. Deal with the imperfections. TCU takes on Kansas State in the Big 12 championship game. And Michigan takes on Purdue in the Big 10 championship game. And Georgia takes on LSU in the SEC championship game. Michigan and Georgia undefeated. TCU undefeated. USC sitting on one loss. Behind them, Ohio State with one loss, Alabama with two. Now, I know how this goes. If Michigan or Georgia lose, they're fine. They'll stay in. If TCU loses, they're in trouble. And they should not be. TCU should be in. They're every bit as undefeated as Michigan and Georgia. There is no way you should take an Ohio State team who, for their last game of the season, got smoked by Michigan and put them in over a similarly one-loss TCU. The argument always goes, well, you can't lose the last game of the season. Isn't that what Ohio State just did? They just lost their last game of the season. So if TCU does the same 1 week later, what? What? What's the difference? Oh, well, you could lose to Michigan, but you can't lose to Kansas State. I think Kansas State's nine right now, right? Did Kansas State come in at nine in the latest poll? So that's 3-9. That is not losing to some mid-major. This, if they get blown out, maybe we crack open the door. But anything short of a blowout, TCU better be in under over Ohio State. I'm tired of college football. I don't care if I know that it's better for ratings. I'm tired of brand name repetitive teams, programs. I'm tired of Ohio State and Alabama unless it's earned. Alabama lost two games. I don't care if they were close. They also won two close games. They barely beat Texas. If for some reason we give them credit for close losses, we got to take away credit for close wins. And there's no way a two-loss Alabama team should go in over TCU. And I'm going to argue not over USC either. Now, I guess an interesting debate would be TCU wins, USC loses. Who goes in, USC or Ohio State? I would still rather see USC. I'd rather see Caleb Williams, probable Heisman Trophy winner, than an Ohio State team that just showed themselves to be truly wanting. I'd rather see the college football playoffs settled right now and have it be Georgia against USC and Michigan against TCU. I don't want to see Alabama or Ohio State. It's been reported that starting in 2024, now that the Rose Bowl signed up, the college football playoffs will expand to 12 teams. Good. Cannot wait. Won't degrade the regular season one iota. Regular season games will still matter. They'll matter more because you won't be out of it by losing two or three games. Cannot wait. In fact, next week after the conference championship games, let's take a look at what the 12-team playoff would be. Now, ready? Tomorrow, Saturday, World Cup. Round of 16, USA versus Netherlands. Let me get you set up and show you just a few things to watch. The Netherlands, which, there's that clip going around from Seinfeld. Why Holland? Is it the Netherlands or is it Holland? Why two names? And how come the Dutch are totally, like, how come you don't refer to the people as Hollandish or Netherlanders? Why Dutch? Why so many different names for the same people in place? Anyway, the Netherlands. Number eight in world soccer. The United States, number 16 in FIFA rankings going into this World Cup. The Dutch, Holland, the Netherlands, they're good. They're really one of the royalty of world soccer. Possibly before Messi and Ronaldo, the best soccer player in history came from the Netherlands. Johan Cruyff went on to Barcelona. He essentially created what we know of today as the style of soccer popularized by Barcelona, now displayed by Manchester City, played by Spain, passed the ball around a ton, tiki-taka soccer until you can move defenders and then carve them open. It's the antithesis of bruising, you know, bomb it and run soccer. Do you remember that you and I some months back talked about refinement culture? There is an interesting article up at The Athletic that the World Cup exhibits that soccer has now devolved into refinement culture, meaning it all looks the same. And nothing's good when it all looks the same. It's better to have everything, like this podcast where I mess up from time to time, be a little more real, messy, not so monolithically perfect. Like that conversation we started at the beginning, a TV show is perfect. A radio show is messy. What's a podcast? Why do you listen to the Will Cain podcast? I would say I agree with that to some extent. World Cup soccer is different than club soccer. Like if you watch English Premier League, it's actually better. It's more perfected. It's more strategic. This is a little messier, a little more chaotic. The goals are less beautiful, less carve them open, less strategic and planned. Sometimes a little more accidental feeling, even if it's not. There's times when you watch Manchester City and you go, nothing went wrong in the 10 passes leading up to that goal. It doesn't always look like that in World Cup because they don't have chemistry. Some of the top teams, Barcelona, Manchester City, Bayern Munich, they play together all the time. Best players around the world, they play together all the time. World Cup teams don't get to play together all the time. And they don't have the all-star roster some of these clubs do. So I don't know that it's as refined as this article suggests, but I get it. And everybody's copying the most popular style, which was popularized through Barcelona, back to the Netherlands, and Johan Cruyff. Cruyff is the godfather, certainly, of the Netherlands and much of modern-day soccer. Here's what you should watch for when it comes to the Netherlands. They're really good on the back line. defense. So I don't mean to be pedantic or patronizing. So if you know a lot of this, I'm sorry. And then if you're the soccer guy, you're going to say, Will doesn't know what he's talking about because everybody loves you. Think of soccer in three lines, roughly. It doesn't always work this way, but roughly in three lines. Defense, midfield, forwards, okay? And they assign how many players are going to be on those lines. Four or three, or maybe five, on any of those given lines. So here's a common alignment. Four defenders, three midfielders, three forwards, okay? And then you can do different things with that, right? You can send some of your defenders forward to confuse the defense. They may go all the way up past the forwards, past the wings. You got to have fast guys to do that. But the point of that and what you're watching for is the Netherlands is really good on the back line, specifically at the center back position. Those guys don't go bombing forward. It's the backbone of the team. So Virgil van Dijk, like a light-skinned black guy, ponytail, plays for Liverpool. Over the last 5 years, been considered the best center back in the game. Really down year this year. He's there. Nathan Ake plays for Manchester City. He's there. And one of the best young center backs in the world, Matthew De Ligt, he's there. Those three guys should... De Ligt hasn't been playing the last two games for some reason. They're the team. Right there, I think. That's the problem. And for a U.S. team that's had trouble scoring goals, that's going to be a problem because those three guys can defend. So it's not a good sign that we have trouble scoring going up against a team that I think is a pretty good team defensively. Next, into the midfield for the Netherlands. Watch a guy named Frenkie de Jong. He's one of the guys I like watching. I've told you my favorites. Kevin De Bruyne, Belgium and Manchester City. They're out. Ugh, Belgium is. Sergio Busquets, Spain and Barcelona. My favorites. Phil Foden, England and Manchester City. Erling Haaland, Norway and Manchester City. You can see a theme. But I like watching Frenkie de Jong. Okay, De Jong. Some of these Dutch names are hard for me. But he's been good in the World Cup, bad for his club at Barcelona. They haven't liked him. They're trying to sell him. He's creative. He's a very creative midfielder. He'll help create for the forwards you need to watch. Two of them. Gakpo is his name. He's young. He's going to go big. Somebody's going to buy him very soon. He's going to go to a super big club like Manchester United and Memphis Depay. So there's your lines, your three lines on who to watch. Gakpo and Depay, De Jong, and then on the back, Van Dijk, Ake, De Ligt. That's your Dutch team. In America, watch Tyler Adams. Try to get everybody through that mess. He's our defensive midfielder. Watch him try to navigate for Weston McKennie or Christian Pulisic to create something, finally to score. And if we're going to score, we're going to have to do something that we have not done. I believe this. We have to play Gio Reyna. He is our young superstar, probably the second most valuable in terms of what teams would pay for him. Behind Pulisic, he plays in Germany, BVB. His dad, Claudio Reyna, soccer legend. Gio, I think he's 19, maybe 20 years old, and he hasn't played. He's got like 10 minutes this World Cup, and nobody can figure out why. He's a forward, a wing. He can help us get goals. We're going to need that. I know you needed that big soccer breakdown, right? But it's something to watch, so it doesn't just all look like chaos. The Dutch will move the ball around in the style that I just described. Little tic-tac passes going through that guy in the midfield I just told you about, De Jong, until he can cut something open up to Gakpo. And that's how they're going to score. And those big center backs are going to try to stop us, probably successfully, because everybody has, in trying to score goals, unless we get magic from McKennie, Reyna, Pulisic. That's what I think is going to happen. Cheer on the USA. Boy, another round would be great, but I'm going to tell you something is... Much as it sounds, this is already a success for U.S. heading into a World Cup here in 4 years in the United States of America in 2026. All right. Been great hanging out with you today. I'll hang out with you tomorrow. We can watch the game together, virtually. I'll be at a bar in New York City somewhere. And send me that email. Send me that tweet. Why do you listen to the Will Cain podcast? I'll see you again next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.